broadcasting live from the KHMB studios in downtown Half Moon Bay. This is Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast. The Coastside's own live call-in talk radio show. From Pescadero to Pacifica and beyond, this is the place for Coastside issues, hot topics, and you. And now, the host of Coastal Windage, Mr. Ruben Truthmaker, and his co-host, Crystalline.
All right, good morning, Coastsiders. It's Friday, October 10th. 2025, time for some Coastal Windage. Good morning, Crystalline.
Good morning.
What a day, eh?
Yes, it is looking beautiful.
Right, summer's here. Okay, this is Coastal Windage. We're here every week. Yada, yada. We got a lot. We got like 153 minutes worth of content for this 59-minute show. So let's get into this. We're officially 1 week out from Pumpkin Festival.
Woo-hoo.
You ready?
Never ready, always willing.
Okay. All right, that's an interesting motto. Okay, I like that. All right, today's topic. See, look at this. We're 30 seconds into the show. We're already hitting the topics. I think that's a new record for us. Today's topics. A Coastside Caltrans mystery solved? Got to, like, you know, roll it at the end because it's still a question. Solved? Like, is it solved? We don't know yet. We'll find out. El Granada Community Park, yet. As you listeners know, a topic has three opportunities to be on the show, and if it keeps getting bumped after the third one, it's three strikes and you're out. I would love to talk about the El Granada Community Park. Hopefully we'll get a chance, but we may not, because in the back half of the show, we have our Shooting the Breeze live interview with Eric DeBody, Executive Director of Abundant Grace Coastside Worker. Can't wait to talk to Eric. So, you know, we'll see. It's hard to say. Got a lot to talk about. This is Coastal Windage. You know that. The number to call. Lots of stuff to talk about. And this is a community talk show. We'd like to hear what you think, Coastside. Give a call. It can just be for 30 seconds. You can just drop in and say, I disagree. Click. Or, I disagree, comma, bladdity blabba. Right? Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, get your bladdities in. Your yadas. Whatever.
Yada, yada,
let's hear
yada.
Some yada yadas. Okay. That number, 650, that's the prefix, so, you know, hopefully you're not writing that down. It's the San Mateo Peninsula, San Francisco Peninsula prefix, 650. Then we go 560-9851. Okay, air quality report. This is the only place you're going to get anywhere on live radio. A live air quality report. This is the air you're breathing right now. The scale is 0 to 50 is incredible. 51 to 100 is moderate. It's one of those days. Today in El Granada, 2. That is almost pure nectar. You almost can't. There's only two more ratings you can get that are any better, 1 and 0. We've had those before, but it's 2.
When it hits 0, the king from Spaceballs can put it in a can and...
Huff it later. Yes, okay, so go and breathe in some. Go outside and take a deep breath. 3 in Half Moon Bay, 10 in Redwood City, 21 in Santa Cruz, and our Easter egg spot of the day, Spokane, Washington. It's 26 in Spokane right now. So all up and down the West Coast, amazing weather, okay? If you know why Spokane is the last place that we put on our air quality report today. If you can figure that out, go ahead and give us a call and get a Windage Buck. Cards produced by the Half Moon Bay High School football team to raise money. 13 offered discounts and freebies at 13 local businesses. Local businesses, at least $100 worth of discounts. You want one of these, so give a call. All right.
Can we also plug the...
No.
Pumpkin.
We're not.
The boys' basketball pumpkin pancake tickets are out there.
Oh, man.
I know that's, like, not your favorite early morning, but
yeah.
I just got our tickets for the breakfast, you know, because we get there at 6 a.m. to start setting up everything for our booth.
Yep.
And so the kids are out there. They've got their tickets. Get your tickets now.
I mean, I gave a deep sigh. I'm glad you mentioned it, though. I gave a deep sigh because Yeah, as a friend of the program, I've been asked to help, and of course I will. I mean, that's what we do, right? We try to help people in this life. But I have to be there both days at like 5 in the morning. And 5 in the morning is okay if that's when you're going to bed, but it is an obscene time. That means I have to get up at like 4 in the morning, you know, because yeah. I got to get all styled up and everything, and then I got to drive down to Half Moon Bay. So it's a brutal weekend for me. However, the pancake breakfast is like a centerpiece of the weekend.
Yeah.
Having worked it a couple years now, you see so many people, both all, you know, locals, people you know, friends and neighbors, but then also people that are just there for the pumpkin festival from out of town. It's a really great thing. And
yeah.
So you want to be part of it. Get
so that
tickets.
Was when I first met best fiance Jesse. That was one of the things that I knew he would be willing to come to Half Moon Bay because he lived over the hill and because he was such a big fan of Pumpkin Festival. And he had years and years and years running, had a tradition where he very specifically came at 6 a.m. is when he would leave his house, get here, do the pancake breakfast, go scope out the booth, and then make his, you know, his holiday shopping. And then head home. But it, like, the pancake breakfast was like a quintessential part of his whole Pumpkin Fest experience. And I think he was like 10 years in when we met.
Yeah, I mean, and the pancakes are delicious. Pancakes and sausage, I mean, can you go wrong? And they've really got it down to a science. All the coaches for the basketball team are the people on the grill, so you get to see them doing the grilling right there. And then, yeah, I pretty much have to start fasting now because one of my job is to run supplies back and forth up the line. And, yeah, just like every time I pass by, like, oh, I'll take a sausage, I'll take a pancake. It's a good thing I'm running because otherwise that's like a 12-pound weekend right there.
And then, you know, just continuing the shout-outs before we move on. Just a reminder, and I know locals know this, but, you know, if there's new locals out there listening, all of the food and beverage that are sold at Pumpkin Fest are local nonprofits. So we've got, you know, Rotary is typically doing, like, clam chowder. You've got Boys and Girls Club.
Rotary typically does, that's their...
Clam chowder,
like,
yeah.
Basketball team does pancakes.
Yes.
Rotary does clam chowder.
Yeah, so something that the beautification committee does, which I think is really awesome of them, is people have to, the nonprofits have to say well in advance what they want to be in charge of, and beautification makes sure that nobody is doing the same thing. So every nonprofit is doing something different. So it just makes sure that they're not competing with one another and make sure that everything is unique and they just don't end up with 12 people doing pumpkin pancakes or pumpkin pies or whatever. And then it becomes kind of the tradition of that nonprofit. Once a nonprofit gets going on a certain item, then they tend to stick with it and it just kind of becomes their fun little thing. So, yeah, so when you come and you buy food and drink from any of the booths that you see at Pumpkin Fest, then just know that those sales are directly going to your local nonprofits.
Which nonprofit's doing the tequila sunrises?
There are beer and cocktail booths, and I believe, and apologies if I'm incorrect, but I believe those ones are actually by Beautification Committee, which is a nonprofit. So the sales of the beer and cocktails helps keep the festival going. And then
in more ways than one.
Yeah. And then Mimosa and the wine is the chamber, so it's our biggest fundraiser. It literally keeps our doors open for, you know, 2 to 3 solid months. And, and pretty much, I think, 35-ish nonprofits will have booths there.
I mean, we'll talk about this more next week because that's the right. Next Friday is... We're on the precipice of Pumpkin Festival, but people need to understand, Pumpkin Festival, yeah, it's a street fair and a festival. It's the major fundraiser for many, many nonprofits on the Coastside. Like this,
next
this
to Coastside Gives,
critical
yeah.
event for Coastside nonprofits.
Yes.
Eric DeBodie just walked in. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you guys?
I'm doing great. Good to see you again, Eric. You may not remember, you and I were paired, I think, I want to say 2019 in the San Mateo County Homeless Census.
Oh, yes.
We went and we looked in on some people down in Pilarcitos Creek.
That's right.
Eric, folks, so Eric is the executive director of Abundant Grace Coastside Worker. We're going to interview him in the back half of the show, but in the meantime, he's sitting in as our third co-host here this morning. Eric's the real deal. Okay, when I went with him that year, we went. It was dark. It's like 5 in the morning, right? These things start, for some reason, they do it really early because they want to see where people are living, unhomed, unhoused. And so we went into the deep into the creek there. Eric speaks Spanish. And seemed to know everybody that was there. I mean, like I said, the real deal. Thanks for joining us this morning, Eric.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Thank you. Okay. We talked about Windage Bucks. All right. So we talked about Street Fair, the Pumpkin Festival. This may not be the season of Festivus, but it certainly feels like the festival season here on the coastside over the last 6 weeks or so. Looking at all the festivals we've had, well, let's start with Summer's End Festival, which was last weekend. How did that go?
Oh, it was really fun. It was really fun.
So this is bands or food or both? Or what exactly is Summer End
Festival? Mostly revolves around music. So there was three bands. There was the Joint Chiefs, followed by Coast Tribe, and last was Radio Gatsby. It's put on by the city's Parks and Rec Department and Commission, and they have like kids like face painting and caricatures. Oh my gosh, that word. So they have fun activities for the kids, and then because so this was the first year back in Carter Park, so the last 2 years that they had it, they had
they've been freshening it up.
Yeah, so they had it on Main Street in the past, but they didn't sell food because they want people to go and patron the restaurants that are right there in the Stone Pine Center.
Yes.
So, but the chamber, they did allow the chamber to do beer and wine sales. So thank you, Half Moon Bay Winery and Hop Dogma. And then we shared the proceeds with Parks and Rec.
So Carter Park, they've infused millions in sprucing that up.
Yes,
I will say
completely rebuilt.
I will say that as a old school person, I spent many day in Carter Park back in the old days with my small child on a push bike going up and down. There was a ramp. There was like an asphalt ramp that went down and then kind of V'd back.
Yep, still there.
Going down the ramp, then going up the stairs and like frolicking in the open area there. So is there seating there now, or?
Yeah, it's kind of, the seating is kind of done in the style of the Greek Theater in Berkeley, where it's like, it's kind of like an extension of the steps.
Yep.
And there's like some like grass part, so that there's cement and they're built into the hill.
Yep.
And then there's like a grass part on the top, so you could walk along them if they're empty, but then you sit on them.
So you mentioned it's in the style of the Greek Theater in Berkeley. My family and I went to the Parthenon in Athens and saw like the original like Greek theater. And it's the technology has not changed. It's cement steps built into the hillside.
Yeah.
No, they actually, in this one, the front row was like kind of fancy seats. So even back then, you know, the VIPs still had the good stuff.
Yeah.
But it was interesting because you see in movies and stuff just like guys in robes sitting on, you know, talking to each other and that's, I guess, how it was. So it was interesting to see the original Greek theater. Okay. We mentioned it's festival season here on the coastside in the last month. We've had the Summer's End Festival. We've had the 6th annual Alpacas by the Sea Harvest Festival. That was last week. And 38th annual Fog Fest. 12th annual Montera Art and Music Festival. Pumpy Fest, of course, is next weekend. Tomorrow, Farallon View Fall Festival from 11 to 4 at Farallon View Elementary. Rides, food trucks, fun. All proceeds go to Farallon View Elementary. My elementary school, I remember, used to have a little I used to have a little carnival. We called it a carnival on the school grounds, like right before Halloween. So there was candy and booze. And I just remember in our little community that being a big deal. So if you're around, go check out the Fairlawn View Festival. What's it called exactly? Hi, show me the... Okay, the interns are falling asleep now. I need my cue cards on the big rack put up. They already went to the next cue card, the Fairlawn View Fall Festival. Okay, great. Okay, we're windshield wipers today. Like good, bad, good, bad, good, bad. Okay, this is Banned Books Week, and it sounds bad, right? Is this the week that we're banning books? No, this is putting a spotlight on the whole concept of banning books. And I love their theme. This is from the San Mateo County Library. So I love their theme this year. Quite cheeky. Their theme this year for banned books, censorship is so 1984. Right? Is that hilarious or what? My son is reading that book in his class right now. And it seems never more relevant than today in America. According to the American Librarians Association, 2,452 unique titles faced book ban challenges in 2024, the third highest number of challenges ever documented. Common justifications for challenges cite LGBTQ+ inclusion, discussions of race, racism, equity, social justice, or claims of obscene content. Yes, you would certainly want to ban anything that dare to discuss equity. I mean, wow. Why would you want to touch that third rail? Like, what could be more negative in today's society than equity? Gotta ban that. Can't let kids hear about equity. The majority of bans are pursued by pressure groups or organized campaigns, comprising 72% of the challenges. Only 16% of challenges are filed by parents, while library patrons are responsible for just 4%. So only 20% of these challenges come from actual people who are upset by the books. The other 72% come from political interest groups that have an axe to grind, and really the books themselves are just cannon fodder, as apparently are the kids that don't get to read them. Okay, if you're one of these groups, look yourself in the mirror, okay? All right, swinging back and forth. We're still over on the... I know we're on the good side now. We swung back. That's what a windshield wiper does. Help me out here. Get back and forth, right? Okay. So no kings. Again, I've got to work on my inflection. No kings? Is that but you do it. You do it. Let's hear you do it.
No kings.
Well, that's more of a... Eric, let's hear... Give me
no
a like...
No kings.
Okay.
For sure.
That's more of you're stating that I'm like, but we're not sure. No kings. Next weekend Next weekend there'll be another No Kings rally on the coast side and elsewhere throughout the country. This is the idea that we don't have a country with kings, right? But somebody forgot to tell Half Moon Bay High School and every other high school in the land. Because later this morning at a rally in the high school gym, Half Moon Bay High School will select its homecoming king and queen. So we do have kings. We do have royalty in this country. In fact, I will be dashing out of here as soon as the show is over to join Mrs. Truthmaker at the assembly, as somehow our son has been elected a member of the court and may get to wear the crown.
Great.
We're breaking news here. You're not going to find this anywhere else. We have put the interns on it. Nowhere else can you find this information, including on the high school website. Here are the candidates for this year's homecoming king and queen. This is the court. So the court gets nominated by teachers. Thank you. The students elect the king and queen, which is kind of a weird mishmashing of political governmental systems. But, okay, we elect the king and queen. Okay, here are the candidates for king. Xander Merrill, Andy Hede, Caden Guevara, Gio Bautista, and Maverick Johnson. For the queens, Gianna Alifano, Violet Holtis, Sydney Sarabia, Colby Camerod, and Mallory. And I asked the interns to handwrite this, and I can't read Mallory's last name. I'm sorry, Mallory. The intern that did this will be summarily chastised after the show, but Mallory is the last queen candidate. Okay. Not expecting my son to win. DraftKings has him at plus 650 to win. If you're betting on this, Gio Bautista is plus 150 to win, so he's a likely king. I would say that, you know, my son's a chip off the old block, right? Except that my childhood was an anonymous scream in space compared to the trail he's blazing. So I don't know where it's coming from, but he's had the childhood I always dreamed of. All right, which I guess as a parent, that's what you try
that's
to do,
great.
Right? Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Okay. The court will be presented at halftime at tonight's home varsity football game. See, this is what I'm saying. Like, I mispronounced my own name. Eric, I shudder to think how Eric will come out at different times over the next 45 minutes.
So far, so good.
Yeah, hang on to your shorts on that one against the mighty Milpitas software engineers, and tomorrow night is the homecoming dance to be young again. Speaking of the Half Moon Bay football team, Mello wins. Last week, our starting quarterback, Paxton Holden, was out, so we had to put in a substitute, which is never a good thing. Backup quarterbacks are backups for a reason, but okay. So, and we put in Brandon Mello, who's
a
sophomore.
Wait, I just want to say, I feel like backup quarterbacks are kind of having a day. Because Purdy was a backup, and he ended up being really great. And then there's a team this year, I cannot remember which one it is, but they were just putting in their backup, and he's turning out to be kind of phenomenal. So backup quarterbacks, you are there to prop up the team, and people want to talk bad about you, but you go out there and you do it.
Wow. Okay. Shout out for the backups out there. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's no better advocate for backup quarterbacks than Brandon Mello, who subbed in for the starter, Paxton. And guess what? He earned San Mateo Daily Journal Athlete of the Week honors. Yes. He went 8 for 9, 136 yards passing, 2 passing touchdowns, 156 total yards. And he led the triple option Cougars offense to scores on each of their first 5 possessions and rode to a 35-0 halftime lead. Although the Daily Journal noted that Mello hadn't taken a snap at quarterback since Pop Warner in 8th grade, this was actually not his first passing touchdown of the season. He passed for a touchdown to wide receiver Will Wimsett in the Cougars' first game of the season against Burlingame on a trick play in which the quarterback got the ball
and then
flipped it over to him. He went like he was going to run, and then he passed it for a touchdown. So, that's pretty nice when your backup quarterback can win Athlete of the Week.
Yeah.
Right? Says a lot. Side note, in my ongoing chafe, it's not a beef. I don't have a beef, but there's a chafe. It's an it's a rubbing irritation of flaky skin on my body.
So gross.
Yeah. That was too far?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm trying to still drink my coffee.
Well,
you're ruining it.
Okay, that flaky skin on my butt. Yeah, okay. But it's a chafe. May I note that the Coastside News web site for information has not one, but 6, currently, right now, not one, but 6 articles about the Terra Nova football team, and not a single article about the Cougars, not even an article about Athlete of the Week, Brandon Mello. Coastside News? Are we Coastside News or are we Pacifica News?
They are both.
Well, I know, but why? Okay, that would tell me
maybe
3 articles about Terra Nova high school football team, 3 about Cougars, or even 1. But 6 about Terra Nova football team? Seems like the folks up at the Pacifica Tribune are cranking it out. What's happening down here? This just goes to my point.
I think this is a great opportunity for somebody who loves Cougar football to be a volunteer contributor and write those articles, and I'm sure that Coastside News would be more than happy to publish them.
But volunteer? I mean, everybody's getting paid for everything in this world, including the Coastside News. Why does somebody have to volunteer and give away their content? Nobody out there in the world's giving away their content. I'm just saying. Six. Again, if there was a couple, six and zero. And Terra Nova's not even that good this year. We're 4-1, 5-1. Come on. Okay, moving on.
Volunteer people. It's good for your soul.
Well, I mean, we're going to talk to someone who can directly address what's good for a person's soul. And something, obviously, you're giving me that look like, yeah, you have no idea what that means, Ruben. And okay. All right. Frank's giving me the fingers for, what? How can that be? It's already 9:25. How is this even possible?
I don't know
if people heard. Frank's got some sound effects thing, and one of them is just ridiculous. He thinks it sounds like clapping of hands. No, it sounds like a giant spider crawling across your floor. Okay. Right. A co-side Caltrans mystery solved? We don't know. In case you haven't noticed, the giant 26-foot statue of Junipero Serra is no longer at the Crystal Springs rest stop on Highway 280, where it's been since 1975. And in typical fashion, there was no announcement from Caltrans, no discussion of that. Just in August, the rest stop was closed for a week. If you drove by there, you might have noticed you couldn't get off there to go to the bathroom or look at the statue or whatever. And when it reopened, statue gone. Caltrans later confirmed it was gone. Oh, really, Caltrans? Thank you for that information. The 26-foot statue, not there. You have to confirm it's not there. Well, I think we can see that. Saying the monument no longer met requirements under the state's transportation art program. Caltrans says the transportation art program installs artwork that represents communities, quote, unique aesthetic, environmental, scenic, historic, and cultural values. Now, Serra was a historic figure, an 18th century Spanish missionary who was instrumental in founding and building the California mission system, once a celebrated part of history. Serra and the mission system are now both seen as part of California's painful era of colonization and the suppression of the indigenous people. I don't know where people fall on that, but there's no dispute or debate about that. The archdiocese was mad because the statue was removed, but I just there's no arguing about what the mission system was. Ironically, Serra was canonized as a saint by Pope Francis in 2015. So, what is Pope Francis? Was that the Nazi saint? I mean, the Nazi pope?
I have no idea.
I think he was. So, okay.
Pope Benedict
was the Nazi pope.
Yeah, Cardinal Ratzinger.
I'm sorry, Pope Francis. My apologies for that. There's no love lost for Serra, the mission system, that's for sure. But it was fun to see that huge statue. It was pretty comical. Sometimes it had like Niners gear on it, and I always just felt like he looked like he was throwing dice in like a back alley craps game, because he was like on his knees with like pointing for some reason. You know, like, you, Catholicism needs you. Okay, but here's the real story. This may help solve a long-standing Coastside Caltrans mystery. No, I'm not talking about who authorized the illegal crosswalk installed by Caltrans with no public notice or coastal development permit in Moss Beach in August 2019, which isn't actually a mystery except for the lies told about it by Caltrans and the office of a still prominent California politician. We'll let that one go for another day. I'm still angry about that. Lied directly to my face by Caltrans public information officer and by folks in this politician's office. Directly to my face, absolute bald-faced lies about it. Anyways, and also clearly, August is the month when Caltrans does its secret non-public noticed work. Okay, so the mystery.
What if they had that on the calendar? There's just like a calendar in the District 4 Caltrans office that's like, this week in August, all devious deeds happen now.
I believe that's true. I think that is a thing. Why August? Because people are on vacation, their roads aren't as busy. Okay, but the mystery that this may have solved is what happened to the statue of Gaspar de Partola that Caltrans removed from Highway 1 in Pacifica. Ironic for the same reasons, because of its representative of the negative Spanish colonization period. ironically, that statue located at the corner of Crespi Drive and the Cabrillo Highway, but okay. Listen to our January 26, 2024 show to hear all about that statue removal. That statue was unceremoniously carted off on a flatbed truck, never to be heard from or seen again. Nobody knows what happened to it. Where is it? Nobody knows. Caltrans, a black hole.
I hope they donate them.
But nobody knows, because Caltrans is a black hole in a black box. But we may have an answer from what happened to the Sarah statue.
Where did they put the Sarah statue?
We're getting to that, Eric.
Right.
From the CBS story, Caltrans later confirmed the removal and that the structure was too fragile to move safely. So if you put those two pieces together, it was removed, but it was too fragile to move safely, so
they
demolished it on site and carted off the pieces. That's what you read into that.
I wonder, and they should have a, because even our city has it, that there is a process that should be adhered to for removing art and things like that. It would be interesting if Caltrans does not have such a policy.
Again, we're talking about Caltrans that had two guys in a white pickup truck and a couple pans of cans of paint come and paint a crosswalk in Moss Beach and then try to tell people that they had done months of engineering and planning. So they should have a process, yes, but they're Caltrans. They do whatever they want to. Frank's giving me the whirly bird, so we'll finish this story up, and then we'll be talking to Eric DeBody on the back half of the show right after these messages.
This is Community Radio for the Coast Side.
100.9 KHMB.
Coastal Windage is brought to you by Cameron's Restaurant and Pub in Half Moon Bay. Come for the food, stay for the fun. That's Cameron's Restaurant and Pub on Highway 1 in Half Moon Bay.
Hi, this is Jay Michaels. Make sure to join me along with Stan Warren Luttrell after Coastal Windage. We'll get a look at today in history and a brand new forgotten find. Coming up at 10 a.m. from 100.9 FM KHMB.
Okay, and we're back. Okay, let's finish up that story because we've got Eric DeBody waiting for us right now. So it was destroyed. The Sarasota statue was destroyed on site and hauled away in pieces, and chances are the old Don de Portola met a similar fate at whatever warehouse it was eventually taken to, and now both lie in unmarked shallow graves in some undisclosed landfill.
That's sad.
It is kind of sad, but there is, I guess,
history is important.
Yeah, true. And it's pieces of art. Maybe they could have sold that to somebody, right?
Well,
made
there's
some
lots
money.
Of schools that are named after Junipero Serra. There's the Carmel Mission has a lot of Junipero Serra stuff. So it's like, I feel like they could have just called one of the missions who have museums and things.
Well, I think critics of this would say there's just an inconsistency, though, because as I mentioned, the Portola statue was on the corner of Crespi, who was in that Portola expedition, Crespi Drive and Cabrillo Highway, Cabrillo being a explorer, I wouldn't call him a conquistador explorer, credited with discovering California, and also the highway from which the Sarah statue was removed is still officially called the Junipero Serra Freeway, as named by Assembly Concurrent Resolution 140 in 1967 in honor of Spanish missionary Junipero Serra. So, pieces here and there, but there's no, like, overarching philosophy. It just kind of seems kind of random of, like, what gets removed and not.
If people want to keep removing history, you're doomed to repeat it. So, we need to have thoughtfulness around arts and history, and you know, people did yucky things in the past, people do yucky things now, and you can't, it just doesn't, don't go around demolishing everything just because it represents something yucky. We need to remember all of the pieces. Because for every yucky thing, there were things that came out of it that are positive and moved us forward in some way, somehow. Both sides can be argued all the time, everywhere. Just need to kind of settle down on all the extreme things.
Well, okay. Well, that's, you can't really argue with that. I don't know if I would go so far as to say there was good people on both sides of the mission system, but people had their motivations. What we're left with is the legacy of that situation, and for some people it's quite painful and 100% negative. We're going to skip El Granada Community Park. I'm sorry if you don't know about this. Go and check it out on the San Mateo County Planning Department's website. It's a beautiful, beautiful design, well thought out, over 70 public meetings to gather information. It's time. Let's do this thing. And per our discussion, one thing that, as a nod to some of the history and legacy, a friend of the show, Kata Gomes from Lucia Te Indigenous Land Trust, has suggested giving El Granada Community Park, which is sited on a Raimatush village, a Raimatush name, Chiwan. That would be fantastic. Here we go. We don't have anything on this coast side, not one single thing on the coast side with a Raimatush name. That would be amazing. Okay. Other than that, the park is awesome and should be a rubber stamp. Let's do this. Okay, let's get to Eric DeBody. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning.
Okay, so Eric, I always leave off the back part of your organization's name. I always call it just Abundant Grace. But it's a Abundant Grace Coastside Worker. And what I've learned from the interns and from my own, I actually did a little bit of my own work. I know. Like,
whoa.
I know you're like, what? I actually did a little bit of my own work. Coastside Worker, and the work part is an important element to your organization. Can you explain that a little bit?
Sure.
Right after we get that. Okay.
First call.
That's your cue. Thank you. Okay, all we need to do is have Eric on and ask him a question, and the phone will ring. All right, this is Ruben and Crystalline and Eric DeBody. Who's on the phone this morning?
Yeah, hi, Chris. This is Jim and Ruben. Sorry. I just wanted to... Quick correction on the Youngfish Ohlone names on the coast side, if we include Pacifica in that. Many of us spent long hours with public outreach to rename what used to be the Bucciano Trail up above Pacifica to the Ohlone Trail. And a quick follow-up with that is you have to tread very carefully because you don't name any sort of a structure or trail or park after a living thing. That was our criteria. So Ohlone means rock in Raimatush vernacular. So I just wanted to throw that into the mix and really appreciate your show.
That's an amazing call, Jim. Thank you so much for calling in with that piece of information. I kind of made my day. Thank you for that call, Jim. Appreciate that.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Wow. I just feel thrilled. That's really cool. So that's in Pacifica. Let's get something on the mid-coast. Let's get something on the mid-coast or south of the tunnel. All right. Eric, we were talking about how work is a critical part of Abundant Grace Coastside Worker.
So historically in my own life, I've been a part of working at soup kitchens and shelters for many, many years. And it was only when I got here to Half Moon Bay that we started a program where we raised a little bit of money so that we could pay some of the folks that were eating breakfast at the Lutheran Church's free breakfast, some of the homeless participants there, to join us and work at this farm south of town, Patron Nuevo Farm. And it was through that I saw that employment programming added this whole dimension to working with the homeless community that I had missed for many, many years. Working shoulder to shoulder with folks in the fields, carrying boxes together, bringing produce back to the center. You know, we had experiences of teamwork. We had times when we could talk one-on-one with each other and get to know each other really quickly. and deeply. And, you know, there was a camaraderie, and it just, it made me see that employment programming with the homeless community had a, it was really a magical element that I hadn't seen in my work in the past. So it's really important, I think, you know, that we view our work at the Workforce Development Center as helping people to encounter kind of the issues in their lives that they want to face in the context of working together to do something good. You know, all the work that we do at Abundant Grace, if it's on the clean team, we're picking up trash and cleaning the environment. If it's at the farm, we're growing food that gets given away to low-income families. It's all public benefit work. It's work that connects the homeless community to the larger community, a community that they often feel alienated from and judged by. And it gives them agency and power and inclusion and investment. So it's really a positive project.
And do these folks get paid for this work?
Yeah, we pay them. It's each session is 3 hours, and we pay them $50.
So part of it is financial, right? They're getting paid some amount of money.
Right.
But part of it is the good feeling that they get from being part of a team, from feeling productive. I mean, and maybe
right.
you can speak to
right.
this. That
and working on themselves, right?
Right. Right. So
when I first started this, my idea was like, I'll create some kind of work and be able to pay people some money, because everybody needs money, right? And that was the extent of my thinking. But as the years went on, my thinking about it changed completely. And now I feel like the work programming is the entree. You know, we attract and invite people to come to work and receive pay. But the real work that we're trying to do on this platform of employment is to engage people about their goals, resources, obstacles, you know, and where they want to be in 6 months. And then, so we have this milestones program, which is kind of overlaid over all of our programming. Every staff person and program manager at Abundant Grace has a number of people on their caseload. And they have to meet with that person regularly, and we have some worksheets that we do with people to identify goals and resources and obstacles, and we have some expectations and benchmarks, like make sure people get a birth certificate, and we, you know, can pay for that. We have vouchers for people to get their California IDs. Occasionally we'll do a DMV day, and we'll drive a group down to the DMV and try to get IDs and that sort of thing. So we try to also get people to get what they need in order to move forward done, because a lot of people, they don't have possession of those documents anymore. It's not like, I mean, I have my original birth certificate in my closet. I've had it for 61 years, you know, and I've never lost it. But that's very difficult for people that live on the streets. Things get lost, things get taken, valuable papers get, you know, even when we provide people with birth certificates, they get lost. We have to find them again. And so it's really important to do those basic things and then to engage people on what their dreams are, where they want to be in the next 6 months to a year, and how they're going to get there.
Prior to you founding Abundant Grace in 2011, who provided these services?
Coastside Hope does a lot of the kind of local work with low-income families in the homeless community. And they're still a partner of ours. Like, we send people over there if they need certain services. They can get what's called CES Assessed, which is the coordinated entry system that the county has for people to get access to shelter. And we don't do that at Abundant Grace, but Coastside Hope does that, and the Pacifica Resource Center does that. PRC has case managers, as well as Coastside Hope, that work with the homeless community on the coast to manage kind of the eligibility for services on the county level that people can access.
So I, for people that aren't familiar, or just, you know, take a 30,000 foot view of it, because it's not a part of their daily life, who is the constituency for Abundant Grace?
What's the makeup of the homeless community?
Are you working with just homeless people, or unemployed people who may have a house but are unemployed, people that are newly released from jail?
Yeah.
Or
no, our mission is to work with folks that are homeless. So, you know, unfortunately, we've had to tell some people that try to access our services who have housing that's not, you know, that's not in our mission to work with that population. But, yeah, for the most part, it's homeless folks, people in the shelter, people camping out, people living in their vehicles. A majority of folks are from the Bay Area. They're not from out of state. Slightly more men than women, and probably 60 to 70% white, 40%, 30% Latino.
So, with the previous to the Coastside Inn being transformed into a residency, there was really no beds on the Coastside, and this was an issue that many people had with the county, that they would pick people up here and drive them over the hill, then release them over there, and this is where they live, or where they were based. So, but it seems, per your discussion, that once they're housed, that your organization is not able to work with them, is a little bit of a double-edged sword. People are getting housing at Coastside Inn, but now they can't avail themselves.
Oh, no, folks that are in the shelter work at our place.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the number of people that we serve has gone up by about 25 now that the shelter has opened. So typically we were seeing maybe 90 to 100 people a year before the shelter. Now it's like 125 to 130. Approximately 20 people at the shelter are currently accessing our services, and we have regular meetings with the shelter where we kind of collaborate and do casework together to talk about our shared participants and what we're trying to support them in doing.
So you would have great perspective on this because, one, you work with a lot of these folks. Two, Abundant Grace is on Kelly, like basically, you know, within a nine iron of Coastside Inn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the worries that people had, you know, one of the hand-wringing about when this was going to be, when the county bought this, was that this is just going to, there's just going to be a wave of crime, and the Coastside going to be a den of iniquity, and it's just going to, like, ruin the whole area there. I haven't seen that, but you're there every
right.
day. What have you seen?
No, that hasn't happened. And the there was an advisory group that was meeting monthly when the shelter first started for a couple of years. And our desire was that would be a kind of a low-key shelter, not in the news, not much happening here. And really, that's largely the case. There has not been any kind of wave or increase in crime. Folks are getting the needed services. If anything, it's really helping to lift people up and move them forward so that if they are able to get a housing voucher, they can move to Pacifica or San Carlos or Redwood City and find a place. Very few people find a place to rent here, unfortunately, but just a few have.
I mean, I think a lot of people, the people are busy in their lives and maybe they don't have time to stop and think about it. The basics. So when you and I went on that particular year, and I've done it a few other years, but that was the first time I'm up and looking up in El Granada in the Mid-Coast, but that year I was assigned to Half Moon Bay Area. People maybe don't think about when you're living in a tent in down by the creek, you don't have a lock on for your stuff, for yourself. You know, I try to explain to my son, how do you even, like, get a good night's sleep in the sense of, like, whether it's other people or animals or whatever, you're out in the open. And so one of the changes that I've seen, and from my distance, I volunteer for the homeless census because I think it's important, but, you know, I wish I did more, but okay. But what I've seen over the past 10 years, it seems like a very big shift in unhoused living, and that is from living out in the open, say, to many, many, many more people living in motorhomes, some of which are drivable, some of which are not. Have you noticed, is that just an anecdotal, I'm seeing more motorhomes up in the Mid-Coast, or has there been some kind of switch to that, and what would be the reason for that?
Yeah, I've seen motorhomes on the Coastside, you know, my entire time here. There's for a period, probably 8 years ago, I remember there was a lot of vehicles parked up by the airport. Right. They cleared those out. There had been some over by Cameron's and Smithfield. They cleared those out. And it's an easy, you know, I mean, it's easy to understand. Housing prices are too high. People don't have the ability to make ends meet. And so the option is to get an RV and be more mobile. It's affordable. And they try to make a living that way. We don't see a lot of people who have motorhomes who come to Abundant Grace because the folks that have motorhomes often have full-time jobs. I can only think of two people that I know who live in motorhomes that we occasionally see.
I mean, again, this, I think it's a misperception or it's a perception that people have that people that are unhoused are just reprobates, right? They don't want to work, they're lazy or they're compromised in some way. And I mean, can you address that?
Yeah, we've got more people than we can provide work for every day. You know, we have to do a lottery because we don't have enough programming to engage all the people that come to our facility.
So five goals of Abundant Grace that you have listed are housing, excuse me, employment, sobriety, mental and physical health, and food security. If we could just, I just want to step through each one of those.
Sure.
Okay. Man, time goes so fast, and we could talk to you for 5 hours today, Eric. Okay, so housing. You know, that we just hear about there's a lack of housing, there's
right.
a housing shortage, and I guess I chafe at that in that, is there a lack of housing, or is there a lack of housing available to people of limited means? Because it seems like the wealthy have...
There's plenty of housing. There's a total lack of affordable housing, right? That's the big problem. I've often thought, wouldn't it be great if cities like Half Moon Bay and others would just declare a moratorium on single-family home building for 5 years and just start putting in duplexes and triplexes.
Apartment complexes.
Yeah, apartments, something that's affordable for folks just to balance it out because we have too many huge homes, too many empty homes, too many vacation homes, that
Can
people
just,
who just need their first home can't even afford it.
That's
you know?
What I was saying. Even more than, like, affordable housing, like, entry-level housing. Because when I was trying to move here for the job, and I had a very decent salary, because there was no apartment complexes, I had to do a four-hour commute daily, because I still had to live in Monterey for the first 6 months, until somebody knew somebody who knew somebody was finishing an ADU that I still live in and I love. But there's just not enough apartment complexes on this coast side that has, you know, 20 units or whatever that even people who are just trying to move out of their parents' house. Like,
right.
There's so many people my age in their 40s, late 30s and 40s, that are still living with their parents because there's just nowhere else to go.
Yeah, it's really impossible. I think that's, I am very excited about Stone Pine that mm-hmm. has been developed. That area looks beautiful, and I've spoken with the contractor there. He's a great guy. Really understands the issues facing California as a state around housing. I think it's why we need to support 555 Kelly. It's a wonderful project to help senior citizens who have been farm workers their entire lives, and the farm worker industry has not afforded them enough to save, has not afforded them a retirement, and it's just a wonderful value to lift up and say, hey, we're a community that cares for our farmers and our farm workers, and we're going to provide these seniors with housing.
I said I wanted to get to the five goals, but Frank is flashing fingers at me, so there's a couple other things I wanted to jump
sure.
around with, and one is, you know, you mentioned the farm workers and the housing at 555. And that was a question I was going to ask you, but you apparently, the intern shared my notes with you, so you already got to that. But we're in an environment right now, coming from the top down, that is unsettling for anybody, let alone somebody maybe who doesn't have documentation, who doesn't have a place to live, or, you know, is Latino.
Right.
How has this affected your what would you call them, clients, your constituency, the folks that you work with? Is there a sense of fear?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, there's very definitely a sense of fear. I I hope that we are not, you know, one of the cities that are targeted by the administration or ICE. I think we're pretty small and unlikely. However, people live with that fear every day. And a few months ago, there was someone kind of spreading the false rumor that ICE was coming into town, and people were really frightened, you know. They hid in our clothing room, and they were worried that they were going to get picked up. And, you know, these are folks largely that are coming from, you know, countries that have been, you know, ravaged by a lot of kinds of social problems and war and poverty, and, you know, they're seeking a better life. And I think people should be, you know, supported in doing that as insofar as they can. And I think we should support legal migration and help people have a path to citizenship.
I mean, when you're fleeing a country that picks you up off the street in a unmarked car with guys in masks,
right,
to come to the shining light on the hill, and then the same thing happens here, it can, you know,
yeah, it's pretty
just,
shocking.
Just yes.
And I think it's incumbent on us who live here to be signs of the hospitality and compassion that we hope to see in our world. You know, that's the only thing that's going to combat the hard-heartedness and brutality, and, you know, that kind of the character of this administration has been so callous.
I mean, again, like, you must have seen the notes, because a general question I have for you, a couple, Eric, given the selfless work that you do, a series of questions here that all kind of in the same thing of, like, how do you keep the faith in times like this? Has America lost its empathy? Has America lost the concept of the greater good?
No, I think we have to understand our species as being essentially tribal, evolutionary-wise. And so the person at the top sets the tone for the tribe, and we have a person at the top who's setting a tone that is, you know, unhealthy, unseemly, horribly callous to people, vengeful, you know. There's just so much name-calling and, you know, a lack of a commitment to public service, which is what politics is supposed to be, you know. We need politicians who are dedicated public servants more than partisan hacks. And we have to embody it. We have to run for offices and fill those positions, and we need to keep proclaiming. It's not a time to lose our faith. This is a time when we need the values that we hold dear from our Declaration of Independence and Constitution, and we need to lift that up now more than ever.
Okay, on those words, we've got another caller. Who we got on the phone this morning?
Hi, Reuben and Eric and Crystalyn. It's Julie Roscoff-Mell.
Julie Mell. What's
Hi,
up, Julie?
I hate to interrupt you in the middle of this, but I want to say that I just wanted to put a plug in for how great Abundant Grace is and how important it is. And they are putting on a drive-in sit-in movie that we're participating in for exposure. And I hope that the community embraces it and attends on October 25th at the lower level parking lot at the high school.
And what is the movie?
They chose Hocus Pocus. On a survey that they're...
It's the weekend before Halloween, so the students chose Hocus Pocus.
Yeah, Claudia Charles is quite the woman. And, she did a survey, I guess, and that was the movie that was chosen. So we're showing Hocus Pocus.
Well, thank you.
It's a really, really nice way to bring Abundant Grace to general audience.
Thanks, Julie.
Thank you, Eric. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it, but thanks for being on and such a great conversation.
Well, your phone's a little cutting out a little bit, but thank you for the call, Julie, and we're looking forward to the 5th annual Beach Break Film Festival. Can't wait for that. Thanks for the call, Julie. Appreciate
that. Can I add one more thing?
Well, I was going to ask you, I think we're thinking along the same. Don't you have a big thing coming up this weekend?
We do. We're doing, it's like a musical concert at Old Princeton Landing, starting, doors open at 2, music starts at 3. The Grateful Heart Band and Pardon the Interruption will be performing. Tickets are available on our website, abundantgracecw.org, or you can look on Eventbrite. We've got a link to the Eventbrite page on our homepage. And the Grateful Heart Band is committed to bringing people together, awakening hearts, and inspiring a more loving and compassionate world, which is right in line with what we're trying to do and what we're talking about today.
And I heard through the grapevine that you're going to get on stage and sing a couple songs with them.
I don't know if I'm going to sing, but they want me to say something after they're set.
I mean, think about that, though. That would be a great YouTube. Here we have Eric DeBodie taking the mic, lead singer for the Grateful Heart Band. Okay. Okay. Frank's giving me the finger, which means that we somehow are already out of time. Eric, we're going to have you back on the show if
Thank
we could.
Thank you so much.
We have so much to talk
appreciate
about.
It.
We barely scratched the surface. Yeah. Really appreciate the time that you've made for us today. Crystalline, you're recovered from Summer's End just in time to go right back into it.
It was training.
Festival.
Summer's End was training for Pumpkin Fest.
Made it easy. Okay. Appreciate everybody listening. For Frank the Engineer, for Crystalline, Eric DeBodie, our guest. Noah, our newest intern, I guess. We call him intern. He's training to be an engineer, I believe. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. Next week's the big pre-Pumpkin Festival show. Don't miss it. Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast.